Music by Vladimir Ussachevsky. Music for Orson Welles's film of Jean-Paul Sartre's No Exit. Well, there is no exit. Henry Lowengard is here, and no escape. And Henry's going to be playing some strange music tonight. A couple of brief notes. Reach over for my notes. First of all, sorry about the Terrence McKenna non-happening. No way out, again, no exit. I mean, from what I've been told, there were no tickets sold. It's really kind of odd. I mean, they really, the week before last week, the people at Irving Plaza hit BAI hard wanting us to promo the show, and evidently, well, they also did a lot of other promotional stuff, and to no avail. BAI would appear to be the only place where there was a response. Don't know if that's the case, but it would appear to be that BAI was the only place where folks responded. Eh, so it goes. Not enough tickets sold. All the folks who evidently were going to show up were BAI folks. Sorry about that to any of you who got screwed over by showing up there. The main reason I didn't bother to take your phone numbers was that we had Terrence McKenna on live last week. The promoters were all on us about the show. Assumed that the show was going to go on. It didn't. So it goes. Announcement about a show that will go on. The 5th Annual Cathedral Arts Festival, April 22nd through 24th. This will be in Jersey City. Not a big thing like the Irving Plaza thing. But again, it's the 5th Annual Cathedral Arts Festival, April 22nd through 24th. That's this weekend. It's at the Grace Episcopal Church, 2nd Street in Erie, in Jersey City. The number to call for information is 1-201-659-2211. That's 1-201-659-2211. Let me repeat that. 1-201-659-2211. Singing Science Records.
Zoom a little zoom in a rocket ship. Off we go on a trip. Heading for the moon at a rocket clip. We're gonna zoom, zoom, rocket. Zoom a little zoom, now we're almost free from the Earth's gravity. Zooming to the moon at terrific speed, because there is no friction. Soon we'll see if the moon is made out of green cheese. Ha 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 ha. Zoom, we're here at the moon. Let's see what the moon is like.
Look at those hairs and jagged peaks. And look at that great big moon up there.
That isn't the moon, that's our Earth.
Oh, we've landed. I feel so light.
Watch me jump. 30 feet, a world record.
Oh, that's easy on the moon. Keep your suit on. Remember, there's no air around here.
Zoom a little zoom in a rocket ship. Home we go on a trip. Coming back to Earth at a rocket clip. We're gonna zoom, zoom, rocket.
Electricity.
AC.
E, electricity.
DC.
A wonderful kind of energy. That's electricity.
CC.
It's the kind of energy you can change so easily. You can change it into heat in the heater. Change it into light in a lamp. Change it into motion in a motor. Change it into sound in a phone. Electricity.
AC.
Electricity.
DC.
A wonderful kind of energy. That's electricity.
CC.
It's the kind of energy we produce so easily. You can make it with a steam or water turbine. Make it when the generator turns. Make it with a simple storage battery. Make it with a photoelectric cell. Electricity. Electricity. A wonderful kind of energy. That's electricity. How would modern living be without electricity?
It would be terribly inconvenient, to say the least. Can you imagine what living would be without electric lights, bells and clocks, heaters and refrigerators, vacuum cleaners, washers, dryers, freezers, fans and elevators, radios and TV sets, hi-fi phonographs, motion pictures, x-rays and the telephone and telegraph, electric motors and machines for home and farm and industry? Our modern world is resting on electricity.
It's essential in today's transportation. Vital if you want light and heat. Necessary in communication. Indispensable mechanically. Electricity.
AC.
Electricity.
DC.
A wonderful kind of energy. That's electricity.
Indeed.
Hello, class. Today we're going to be spinning lots of very old scratchy records from my personal scratchy record collection, some of them even without covers, in the classic Christian Marclay way.
Henry Lowengard on Oblique Strategies.
Hey, substitute teacher Mr. Lowengard, get back in your chair and raise your hand. Oh, put it back down. Stop. No monkey housing or rough housing.
Tell us about these records that we just heard. I mean, they're like sort of like almost like things that I remember in a very blurry sense from my childhood.
This is, it's like sometimes it's hard to believe they existed, but there was a sort of a push when we were losing the space race early on to push for science education. And although these were not federally funded anyway, this is these records are officially put out by the Argosy Music Corporation, or Singing Science Records, they're really called. Motivation Records is the label. It's one of those things like today with 58 different labels. They came out in the late 50s, early 60s. I'm not quite sure because, of course, back then nobody put dates on them and nobody collected things like they do now, and big piles of things. But, yes, they're written by Hi Zarrett, who wrote the lyrics and text, and Lou Singer, who composed the music or set, you know, sometimes these are set to folk songs as well, which makes them extremely catchy and sort of folk songs in their own right. And they were played sort of endlessly, at least in my public school, way back when I was a wee sprout, and many other people of Kel Age, of the same kind of vintage. Oops, now my stupid talking watch is yakking in the background and distracting me from my... Oh yes, shut up. Very good.
It's well, not, that was perfect,
it's electricity.
Actually.
Actually, the best segue after that would have been to Brazil, you know, and you could have just continued dancing out the door.
It's weird because, I mean, this stuff was ultimately transformed into pop culture. You've got some stuff from They Might Be Giants, but immediately what comes to mind is the band Devo. I mean, Devo, in a way, did a kind of goof on this. You know, you remember Devo, don't you?
Yeah, sure. They wore those lovely jumpsuits and strange goggles and things like that, and they were quite strange when they first came out, and then everybody copied them and were not so strange anymore. But actually, they were quite good, and if somebody can hum Whip It to Yourself or Mongoloid or Shrivel Up, some of the favorite old Devo hits, you know, they still endure today in the karaoke bars in America's hearts.
The Motherbrow Brothers, as it were.
That's right. And there was like a connection between Mark, I guess, and Roland. So he'd get all their synthesizers before they were released, and they'd go and play them, and that was always very cool.
They were one of the first people to use a Fairlight, I think, too, I mean, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I don't know one way or the other, but they very well may have been.
Suffice it to say that, you know, it's pop culture meets science, but in a way, I mean, we've come a long way since then. I'm thinking, of course, of James Burke, and not that James Burke isn't ideal, but I do think there's a kind of beauty to James Burke's work, and, you know, we've gone from what we're hearing here, which is sort of pop. I don't know what it is. We should keep going with it. We should keep going with it and just sort of experience
That's
it.
That's right. Everybody has their favorites, and we'll gladly take requests. I only have 5 of the 6 records, and I might as well mention that the 6 records that came out were, well, the first one that you heard was from Space Songs. That was the famous Zoom a Little Zoom in a Rocket Ship, or just Rocket Ship song, which I used on my cart, cut down a little bit. And second, with Electricity from Energy and Motion Songs. Great records all in all. And, of course, it's Tom Glaser doing the singing on some of these. Dottie Evans is the female voice that you hear occasionally. And on other ones, we'll get into some of the other people. But again, the ones I have here are Space Songs, Energy and Motion Songs, Experiment and Activity Songs, which features things like Friction. I'm sure you want to hear that one. And Vibgior and many other favorites. Nature Songs with some of my very favorite little ditties, calypso ditties about why we shouldn't screw up the balance of nature, etc. And Weather Songs I have here, which with Tom Glaser and the Weather Vanes. So the one I don't have is more nature songs. So if you want to find out about mysteries of metamorphosis, hibernation, fossils, evolution of the horse, conservation, pollination, the why of rainbows, the structure of plant, and changes of seasons in the face of the earth, grades 2 to 7, I'm afraid you're out of luck.
But suffice it to say that these records have not been reissued on CD.
I haven't seen them. I would drool to see them reissued, and in fact, to have, you know, do tribute albums now that people like They Might Be Giants are covering some of the songs, and in fact, I will toss this CD
well,
across
we'll
the
we'll go to this particular
we'll go to the one
record
I queued
first,
up,
and then we will play the CD, and we'll be right back, and, you know, we'll do a kind of open-ended show tonight. We'll see where we go. We'll play some Singing Science records, and then we'll see where we go. Here we go, Singing Science.
There is no disputing, there is no refuting. We're all indebted to Sir Isaac Newton. Because Sir Isaac discovered, his genius uncovered, the nature of natural laws. For example, it's simple, said he, the first law of motion should be an object at rest tends to remain at rest, and an object in motion tends to remain in motion with the same speed and in the same direction. There is no disputing, there is no refuting. We're all indebted to Sir Isaac Newton. Because Sir Isaac discovered, his genius uncovered, the nature of natural laws. If an apple falls down on your head, that is gravity, Sir Isaac said. It strikes me that all objects in the universe exert gravitational attraction upon each other. There is no disputing, there is no refuting. We're all indebted to Sir Isaac Newton. Because Sir Isaac discovered, his genius uncovered, the nature of natural laws. He illumined the subject of light and showed an amazing insight.
by passing a beam of sunlight through an opening in a darkened room and into a prism, ladies and gentlemen. I believe we can see that white light is a combination of the seven colors of the rainbow. There is no disputing, there is no refuting. We're all indebted to Sir Isaac Newton. Because.
He constructed a reflecting telescope.
Because. He made great discoveries in the field of mathematics. Because.
He discovered many of the laws on which physics and mechanics have been developed.
Because. Sir Isaac discovered his genius, uncovered the nature of natural laws. Naturally, he was a genius.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees. Yo-ho, it's hot. The sun is not a place where we could live. But here on Earth, there'd be no life without the light it gives. We need its light, we need its heat, we need its energy. Without the sun, without a doubt, there'd be no you and me. The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees. The sun is hot.
It is so hot that everything on it is a gas. Iron, copper, aluminum, and many others.
The sun is large.
If the sun were hollow, a million Earths could fit inside. And yet, the sun is only a middle-sized star.
The sun is far away.
About 93 million miles away. And that's why it looks so small.
And even when it's out of sight, the sun shines night and day. The sun gives heat, the sun gives light, the sunlight that we see. The sunlight comes from our own sun's atomic energy.
Scientists have found that the sun is a huge atom-smashing machine. The heat and light of the sun come from the nuclear reactions of hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen, and helium.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees.
Is the boundary between two masses of different kinds of air. Such air masses extend over distances of thousands of miles and determine the weather in a region for several days.
The weather changes, I've been told.
Hi-ho, the weather, oh.
The weather changes, I've been told.
It changes day by day.
The weather changes, I've been told, are caused by fronts both warm and cold.
They cause the weather changes from day to day.
The warm fronts, the cold fronts, a pushing and a wandering.
They cause the weather changes from day to day.
A warm front will occur, they say.
Hi-ho, the weather, oh.
When warm air pushes cold away,
it changes day by day.
When warm air pushes cold away, a warm front's here but not to stay.
Because the weather changes from day to day.
The warm fronts, the cold fronts, a pushing and a wandering.
They cause the weather changes from day to day.
Barometer
water shows pressure's down. Hi-ho, the weather, oh, a warm air mass has come to town. It changes day by day. A warm air mass has come to town, and rainy weather hangs around. Until the weather changes some other day. The warm fronts, the cold fronts, a pushing and a wandering, they cause the weather changes from day to day. When cold air rise beneath the warm, hi-ho, the weather, oh, the warm air cools and clouds will form. It changes day by day. The warm air cools and clouds will form, and that can cause some thunderstorms. That's how the weather changes from day to day. The warm fronts, the cold fronts, a pushing and a wandering, they cause the weather changes from day to day.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees. Yo-ho, it's hot. The sun is not a place where we could live. But here on Earth there'd be no life without the light it gives. We need its light, we need its heat, we need its energy. Without the sun, without a doubt, there'd be no you and me. The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees. The sun is hot.
It is so hot that everything on it is a gas: iron, copper, aluminum, and many others.
The sun is large.
If the sun were hollow, a million Earths could fit inside. And yet, the sun is only a middle-sized star.
The sun is far away.
About 93 million miles away. And that's why it looks so small.
And even when it's out of sight, the sun shines night and day. The sun gives heat, the sun gives light, the sunlight that we see. The sunlight comes from our own sun's atomic energy.
Scientists have found that the sun is a huge atom-smashing machine. The heat and light of the sun come from the nuclear reactions of hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen, and helium.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees.
Indeed.
And now you know something about the thermonuclear reactions going on inside of our own sun, which you can't see now, but it's actually on the other side of the Earth. It hasn't fallen down. The sky has not, the moon has not eaten the sun. In fact, it is on the other side of the world right now. And in fact, we could place a phone call to a place where the sun is, but, you know, BAI is on a very constrained budget, and you'll just have to take my word for it.
Yeah, people were calling asking what's going on, and I told them that BAI is legally obliged to do a certain amount of educational programming, and, you know, this is it.
And actually, so are all the radio stations, but they never get around to doing it. So
we're doing it now.
We're doing some of it for now. We'll fill up our quota.
Of educational programming. What did you, when you first, I loosely remember hearing these. I mean, they didn't really affect me. I was never real, I didn't get into science till later in my life. I didn't become a nerd till much later in my life.
Well,
you know?
I was a nerd really early in my life, so I listened to these very carefully, and that's why I am what I am today, because every time I have a problem, I repeat these little songs over to myself loudly, sometimes joining in with my fellow nerds, and And it solves various problems, teaches me things. Yes.
What does it teach you?
Why, first of all, it's their whole attitude, which was pretty interesting. And it became very apparent that they actually did shove quite a lot of information in a sort of metaphorical way sometimes into these little catchy tunes, exploiting almost as many pop genres of their time as they could get away with. And I haven't done the Grand Coulee Dam yet, but that's about as close to rock music as they got on these things. It was still pretty early on in the acceptance of the rock kind of genres, but eventually other people have attempted to do similar things, like the Multiplication Rocks and the Schoolhouse Rocks, which were also pretty successful. Kids seem to like them a lot, much to the surprise of people who are trying to be much cooler. But I guess the nerds of the world are still there. We still speak for our generation.
Nerds have become hip. What do you think of that, of like the fact that nerds...
I was never one of the kind of nerds that you used to find in the nerd poster, which actually was more or less what started a lot of this stuff in the National Lampoon. It didn't really start it, but it was a consciousness.
It's was like, Alfred E. Newman a nerd? I'm just curious.
No, he was just stupid. But okay. Alfred E. Newman, you know, is like an iconic American figure long before he had the name of Alfred E. Newman, or Melvin Kosnowski, which was his original name before he was changed, or... You know, there were Alfred E. Newman-like characters appearing earlier and earlier if you go and look at that fabulous big, fat, coffee table-sized Mad magazine book, which I have. But I don't have that at home. I don't have a coffee table, so I have no use for coffee table books. And I don't drink coffee.
Have they made a Mad magazine CD-ROM yet, would you know?
I think that that would be in their best interests, actually. But I don't think they're into it yet.
I was just looking at... they have a CD-ROM version of the book Mouse, the speaker.
In fact, they had to recall it because there's some bugs in it.
Really?
And so you guys who have it already, you have a collector's item that's beyond a collector's item, you know? It's like those damaged 1903 Air Flight stamps, you know, or something like that. If you have one of those busted Mouse CD-ROMs, I think Voyager has to recall them to do something. This may just be a foolish rumor that I caught on the old net. But it seems that that's the story, and they'll have to fix something. I don't know what's wrong. Maybe it goes into a loop or something lovely like that. But apparently it's a very nice production, and it not only has all the Mouse stories, but lots of Mouse background and original recordings of Vladek and all this other stuff.
Yeah, it was very interesting. They reviewed it on the Computer Chronicles this previous week on cable television.
I don't know.
You don't watch that stuff.
You don't have a TV. Right.
Good for you.
I have my Singing Science records.
That's right.
Who needs TV when I can imagine the universe in a grain of sand?
Reminds me of, I hate to touch on Terrence McKenna again, that was last week, but...
Oops,
the
sorry.
But, no,
I took somebody else's karma.
No,
without
funny.
Returning the keys.
When I was talking to the folks at Irving Plaza about promoing him, they quoted Jerry Garcia from me, who said, who needs God? We've got Terrence McKenna.
Hmm.
So, you know, who needs TV? We've got Singing Science records. Who needs God? We've got Terrence McKenna.
Hmm.
Thus sayest Jerry Garcia.
Fits in with that little letter you got this afternoon. But anyway.
Yes, from some strange psychedelic church. But anyway, let's move on, and we might get interactive
later.
We're going
to continue educating because recess is almost over. You have to go back and get your little lunch bag. I'm not going to get into what I used to eat for lunch for the good first, you know, middle 8 years of my life or whatever it was, but it was not a pleasant kind of thing.
Anyway, let's move on here. And more
and
singing
we, and
songs.
And remember, we do take requests. If you can remember any of these, and I have them, we'll take them.
Just call 279-3400. That's 212-279-3400. Then we might, you know, open the phones later, discuss science. Henry would be a perfect person to discuss science with. But we'll play it by ear. We'll see what happens. Playing it by ear is a good way to do radio, Henry, by the way. Playing it by ear. But anyway, let's move on with some more singing science records.
Our Earth is like a great big grapefruit 25,000 miles around. On the outside, land and water and the atmosphere are found. Inside the Earth, there's rock and mineral 25,000 miles around. Lighter rock is near the surface, heavier rock is way deep down. The outer part is called the crust, the center is the core. From core to crust, the earth is just a lot of rock and ore. Our earth is like like a great big grapefruit, 25,000 miles around. You could dig from here to China if you could dig through the ground. But you can't. Now, there are many useful things inside the earth. Iron ore, from which we get iron. Lead ore, from which we get lead. Tin ore, from which we get tin. Stone for building and clay for making bricks. We also get coal and gas and oil from the earth. In fact, the earth is a giant storehouse of useful materials that make our lives more comfortable. Our earth is like a great big grapefruit, 25,000 miles around. You could dig from here to China if you could dig through the ground. But you can't.
High above us, way up yonder, planets wander through the starry skies. While we gaze at them and ponder, they just wander on.
Stars appear to blink and twinkle, but the planets have a steady glow. Are the stars and planets different, and what makes them so?
High above us, way up yonder, planets wander through the starry skies. While we gaze at them and ponder, they just wander on.
Which is the biggest?
Jupiter.
Which is the brightest?
Venus.
Which one has a ring?
Saturn.
Which one is most likely to support life?
Mars.
Which one is nearest the sun?
Mercury.
Which is the one we love the best?
Good old Mother Earth.
High above us, way up yonder, planets wander through the starry skies. While we gaze at them and ponder, they just wander.
The rolling boulder crashing down the mountain, that's kinetic energy.
Kinetic.
The boulder sitting high upon the mountain, that's potential energy.
Potential.
Energy in motion is kinetic. Energy that's waiting is potential. But whether it's kinetic or potential, both of them are energy.
Olay!
You stretch a rubber band and then release it. That's kinetic energy.
Kinetic.
You stretch a rubber band and then you hold it. That's potential energy.
Potential.
Energy in motion is kinetic. Energy that's waiting is potential. But whether it's kinetic or potential, both of them are energy.
Olay!
The heat that comes when gasoline is burning, that's kinetic energy.
Kinetic.
The energy that gasoline has stored up, that's potential energy.
Potential.
Energy in motion is kinetic. Energy that's waiting is potential. But whether it's kinetic or potential, both of them are energy.
Olay!
If it weren't for the birds, remember my pet, the balance of nature would be upset. The insects of the world would surely double, and the people of the world would be in trouble.
Should be understood. the balance of nature is ever unbalanced. Whatever will happen will not be good. If it weren't for the snakes, mice would multiply. And without the algae, the fish would die. The flowers and the fruit need pollination, and the balance of nature consideration.
Trees are chopped down, we have floods and soil erosion and a reduced water supply. If too many plants are destroyed, the animals may not have enough food and oxygen. If too many animals are killed, the minerals and carbon dioxide that animals supply to plants will be diminished.
The balance of nature must not be unbalanced.
If the balance of nature is ever unbalanced, whatever will happen will not be good.
Among the many kinds of light rays, there's one called ultraviolet. Should not forget.
Ultraviolet rays are important in fluorescent lights, and they also cause sunburn.
Among the many kinds of light rays, there's also one called infrared. And when you're thinking of this light ray, this fact should linger in your head.
Infrared rays are very useful in broiling food and for heating.
Ultraviolet and infrared. Ultraviolet and infrared. Among the many kinds of light rays, there are ultraviolet and infrared.
And what are the others?
The spectrum of visible light ranges from red to violet. On one side of the spectrum are the infrared rays. On the other side are the ultraviolet rays. These are a small part of a much larger spectrum of electromagnetic waves. The complete spectrum of electromagnetic waves ranges from radio and TV waves through infrared to light, ultraviolet, and then to X-rays, gamma rays, and cosmic rays at the opposite end.
Ultraviolet and infrared. Ultraviolet and infrared. Among the many kinds of light rays, there are ultraviolet and infrared. And infrared. And infrared. And infrared.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
Scratchy
indeed.
Scratchy Records. One of the scratches of my early life. Of course, I don't really think that song actually ends, but, you know, it probably...
We heard, well, we got the experience. We got the gist. Anyway, they...
especially good around an infrared campfire at night.
We're getting interesting calls about this stuff. I mean, people do remember them. People do indeed remember them. They're actually making requests remembering songs that they heard 30 years ago, 30 some odd years ago, remembering
They do sort of stick in your head.
Yeah. You know, again, this was never really my thing when I was a kid, but it's strange because it explains a lot. In a way, it explains a certain mindset to me.
Well, you know, they're delightful and instructive, and as a science teacher, I see in these records the most potent force for improving the science literacy of our nation, says Dr. Morris Meister, the president of the Bronx Community College.
Mm.
And last night I took the record home and played it, and I think it's magnificent, says C.O. Wright, the editor of the Kansas Teacher.
What? How
old?
You
want me to read some more of these old liner notes? I love doing it.
It's fun, but a quick question. How old were the kids that these records were created for?
Let's see. Well, they have some of these... are unmarked. The only one that says grades on it was More Nature Songs, which is the only one that I don't have, and that was for grades 2 through 7, so I guess some of these were used right up to junior high school, I guess.
Hmm.
I got them in, you know, like grades 1 through 3 or something, but I, of course, had them around the house, so what does it matter? Of course, then again, I was buying, like, Electric Company records when I was in high school, because that was clearly the best show on television at the time, and did have 2 Tom Lehrer songs on it, and I can get into... I brought my little Tom Lehrer book here.
Tom Lehrer songbook.
I didn't bring the CDs or anything because I don't happen to have any. But
yeah, I'm going to do it. One of these days I'll do a Tom Lehrer special. He's certainly worth bringing back to BAI. I mean, Tom Lehrer was, you know, when I was a kid, I listened to this station, and, you know, one of the folks that this station introduced me to was Tom Lehrer. Many moons ago, Tom Lehrer and Marshall Efron. You all remember Tom Lehrer and Marshall Efron from the good old days on BAI.
Hey.
I'm sure Max remembers them, you know, Tom Lehrer and Marshall Efron. Marshall Efron's still around, so is Tom Lehrer.
Yes, they are. I don't know. But, yeah, is that whole new math song that he had, which is almost a rap song at this point. You know, it could be recast. It could be redone, just as I would very much like to have these singing science records redone at some point, not to bring up their orchestrations to the modern techno educational world, but just to try and continue them in more or less the same hokey folk kind of genre that they are. Actually, we'll get more into these nature songs, which are sung by Joseph Murray and Miranda, who are from South Africa, which is why their voices are a little strange in their accents. We only played that one cut from them, The Balance of Nature.
Mm-hmm.
But... actually, her voice used to frighten me when I was a kid because it was so high and screechy and scratchy. But I've eventually gotten used to it, and now I really like it. How tastes change over many decades. Indeed they do.
Why revive this stuff now?
Well, because, the kids of the kids need this helpful information, and, of course, their large nostalgia value, and... you know, they do present this stuff effectively if they've lasted this long. I think that they actually sort of work in a sort of perverse way.
They do sort of work in a perverse way. there is something just bizarre about all this stuff, but it's fun.
It's like the multimedia of the early 60s, and this was a chance. You have to remember that they would drag these records in, and it was a special event to turn on a record player in the classroom back then. You know,
it was
slide, you know, film strips, sometimes with records, and I would love to get some of these records with little beeps on them in the middle, because as a guy who samples a lot of things, this is fine fodder for samplers and text pieces, and with the little beeps on it. And I will tell you a fine anecdote of my eighth grade, when I was building oscillators like a really good nerd, and I had my little briefcase, which I drag around with me, and one day, it was the perfect combination. I had an oscillator in my little briefcase, a substitute teacher, and a film strip with a slide record like that, with a little narration record. And there were beeps on the records.
The roots grow down and spread all around, and hold the tree firmly in the ground. Hold the tree, hold the tree, hold the tree, hold the tree. Hold the tree firmly in the ground. A tree has roots, a trunk, and a crown.
tree, hold the tree, hold the tree, hold the tree, hold the tree for me.
The roots also provide nourishment for the tree.
How do they do that?
The root hairs absorb large amounts of water and minerals from the earth. This water travels through the roots, through the trunk, and through the branches to the leaves. The leaves use it in making food for the tree. The minerals are used by the cells in other parts of the tree for new growth. The bark is the outer protective covering of the tree. Under the bark is the cambium from which new wood and bark grow. Trunk, roots, crown, bark, cambium.
Glass of milk, standing in between extinction and the cold and explosive radiating growth. So the warm blood flows through the large four-chambered heart, maintaining the very high metabolism rate they have. Mammal, mammal, their names are gone, they raise a paw, the bat, but you're reminded that it once was there. From the embryonic whale to the monkey with no tail. So the warm blood flows with the red blood cells lacking nuclei through the large four-chambered heart, maintaining the very high metabolism rate they have. Sister have her brother marsupial, their cousin called monotreme, dead acalalotheria. Mammal, mammal, their names are called, there is a paw, the bat, the cat, dolphin and dog, koala bear and hog, the fox, the ox, giraffe and shrew, the kid, the cat.
Are warm-blooded and their body temperatures always remain about the same in hot or cold weather. Cold-blooded creatures like snakes and frogs and insects and fish get sluggish when it's cold, and many of them cannot stand the heat. The warm-blooded mammals have a great advantage in adjusting to different kinds of weather and climate.
What is a mammal?
Understands. They're warm-blooded, have hair on their bodies, and suckle their young from mammary glands. A camel is a mammal, and so is a cat. A dog, a lion, a rabbit, and a bat. And a whale might seem like a fish to you, but a whale is really a mammal, too. And then, of course, there's a chimpanzee. Well, he's a mammal like you and me. So is a horse, a deer, and an elephant, well, of course, a sheep, and a goat, and a kangaroo, and many others we see in the zoo.
Now it seems to me I've named quite a few.
How would you like to name some, too? Go ahead, name some.
Now, anyone can tell you what a mammal is, anyone who understands.
And suckle their young from mammary glands.
What makes the lightning? It's a story in rhyme, where the negatives and the positives make the heaven shine. They were separated, then when they accumulated, got together and created lightning. Now every little raindrop has some electricity, both negative and positive electricity. And when the little drops get tossed through the air, the negatives and positives separate there. The negatives and positives separate, go off to different places and accumulate. The bunches get bigger, the attraction gets stronger, till you just can't hold them back any longer. Flash, a bunch of charges are off, and as they streak through the air, a mighty electric current sweeps through the air. There's a heat and a flash as the charges dash between the clouds or the clouds and the earth to join the opposite charges there. Flash, crash, that's lightning, brother, and that's positive. What makes the lightning? It's a story in rhyme, where the negatives and the positives make the heaven shine. They were separated, then when they accumulated, got together and created lightning.
Who's afraid of thunder? Thunder's just a lot of noise. Who's afraid of thunder? Like the noise we make with toys. When the thunder comes with a boom, 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 we get out our drums and we room, toom, toom. When lightning flashes through the sky, it heats the air as it goes by. The air expands and rushes back. That's what makes a thunderclap. Who's afraid of thunder? Thunder's just a lot of noise. Who's afraid of thunder? Like the noise we make with toys. When the thunder comes with a boom, 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 we get out our drums and we room, toom, toom. Through the sky, it heats the air as it goes by. The air expands and rushes back, and that's what makes a thunderclap. Thunder's just a lot of hot air. Who's afraid of thunder? Thunder's just a lot of noise. Who's afraid of thunder? Like the noise we make with toys. When the thunder comes with a boom, 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 we get out our drums and we room, toom, toom.
Boys and girls, I hope you enjoyed our show. Oh, thank you. But even good
can
things
can energy change
end,
from so? One kind to another?
Yes, energy can change from one kind to another. For example, water power can be changed into mechanical energy, and from that into electrical energy. Would you like to see how it happens? Let's take a quick trip to the Grand Coulee Dam. They've got a lot of water at the Grand Coulee Dam. They use a lot of water at the Grand Coulee Dam. They need a lot of water at the Grand Coulee Dam to turn a lot of turbines at the Grand Coulee Dam.
They change water power.
The turbines are a-humming.
Change water power.
Power keeps it coming.
Change water power. The great generators make electric current at the Grand Coulee Dam.
Of the turbines at the Grand Coulee Dam is turning generators at the Grand Coulee Dam and turning water power at the Grand Coulee Dam into electric currents at the Grand Coulee Dam.
They change water power.
The turbines are a-humming.
Change water power.
Power keeps it coming.
Change water power. The great generators make
make electric current at the Grand Coulee Dam. They turn mechanical energy into electrical energy when they make electric currents at the Grand Coulee Dam.
Beep, 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 beep. Here comes the satellite. Beep, beep. And now it's out of sight. Beep, 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 beep. Around the earth it goes. Beep, 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 beep. And that's how science grows.
A second, or it'll never stay up. Some of them can go around the earth in only an hour and a half.
Beep, 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 beep. Around the earth it goes. Beep, 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 beep. And that's how science grows.
Is that a scratch? No, it's not. Well, it is a scratch, but it's not, you know.
Not one of those repeating scratches.
It's not one of those repeating scratches. Well, like
look
beep.
At it whiz.
An eternity of beeps. God, an eternity of, beeps.
Well, you know, that was very accurate for the time. All the telemetry was carried over in the audio frequencies before they got to be at higher frequencies than the ear could hear. So what do you know?
You know, it's funny, but just purely by as a kind of joke, I did begin, largely because I thought it would be a good segue from a soundscapes, you know, sort of having a feel for both these shows, helping Andrew out with soundscapes and going into this. I thought that the suite from No Exit would be a nice little segue. But come to think about it, you know, if you think about that play, No Exit, sitting around listening to science, these singing science records for all eternity, it'd be kind of interesting. I mean, it'd be kind of an interesting vision of hell. Not that they're not fun. They are fun. They are fun, but just being forced to listen to these, you know, just, you know, could you imagine?
What hell? This was school.
This was school. School is hell. But, you know, I could just imagine that as a kind of vision. You know, in a way, I'm really enjoying this because it's giving me an insight into something that I got into later in my life. I kind of segued to it, an interest in science. But, my God, you know, to sing like the No Exit here, the Orson Welles version of it. Yeah, that would be a kind of strange vision of hell, sitting around listening to this for all eternity. Over and over.
Oh, kids used to have to listen to Shakespeare all the time.
That's true. That's even worse. That is even worse. You're absolutely right. Indeed.
And actually, I have some like poetry books from the 19th century, which will make you glad you're listening to the singing science records and not reciting these fabulous poems.
Yeah, I mean, it is a kind of. And anyway, we're getting to all of your requests. I mean, thus
That's
far,
right.
Henry.
I've been servicing these requests. I know what records they're on and things like that, and I'll take more. Yes, of course I'll take more. And but first, well, we'll go to one of them, and then I'm going to also. We're going to cue up this other record that I brought in that's actually not in the Singing Science series. This is a knockoff, ha, from Disney. And Disney is going to have Jiminy Cricket and a large orchestra and his friends teach you how to do some multiplication and division. This is educational and entertaining, starring Jiminy Cricket, but not directly here because we have something else cooked up. This is from 1963. I guess I don't remember how old Cliff Edwards was at the time, but he doesn't do a lot of vocal turns on this particular disc. But they do have some catchy numbers. teaching you the multiplication by ones was a particularly simple task, but they go to it with great gusto.
Anyway, we should mention that these recordings were made around 59, 61, in that period.
Yeah, somewhere around there. I'm not quite sure how long they took to put together or whether they were all released in one shot in a package, although they all seem to have all their other ones on the back of the delightful record covers, which were, by the way, the covers I used to, like, stare at for hours. And the inside liner notes, of course, they had all the lyrics on the inside, which was a very nice thing to have at the time. Not too many people put their lyrics in with their records. And in the lyrics, they always had an empty spot on the, you know, in the, all the blank spots in between all the lyric sheets. They had this great little box at the bottom that said, "When you see an empty space, put a picture in its place." And this is my philosophy. And in fact,
oh my God,
I have one of them here, and sure enough, there are pictures in their places, complete with lightning, rainbows, and primitive attempts at spelling, I believe. And here, well, we'll get to that song later. Oh my goodness. Well, that's right. So we'll play some more requests, and of course we do take requests at 279-3400 for singing science stuff. And sometimes if it may be just a Proustian experience, you only vaguely remember a couple of key phrases, "I know all." So if you just say, "Oh, I want the one that has the names of the rocks in it," you know, or something like that, I might be able to help you out, unless it's on
and
the
record. And, of course, most of the requests are of that nature.
That's right.
And that people... Oh, actually, there are
two... I want to bring it back for you. We're here to help.
Okay.
As well as educate.
Here we go.
In a jet plane, hot gases shoot out of the back of the engine at great speed. Energy for the motion of the gases is supplied by the burning of fuel. The action of the rushing gases causes an equal and opposite reaction, which sends the jet plane forward.
And that's how a jet plane flies! The law of motion applied to jets is simply action and reaction. The zooming power the engine gets is simply action and reaction.
The gas compressed inside the engine pushes out in all directions. Sideward thrusts are equalized and can't escape from the jet. Gas exhausted through the engine brings an opposite reaction. Give the jet its forward thrust. That's all there is to a jet.
The law of motion applied to jets is simply action and reaction. The zooming power the engine gets is simply action and reaction. Newton said it, give him credit, his law of motion still applies.
For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction.
And that's how a jet plane flies.
What kind of tables don't have any legs? What kind of chickens don't lay any eggs? The rooster's eggless by his reputation, and the tables are the tables of multiplication. The table of one has the simplest ranges. The number that you multiply never changes. One times three is always three, and one times two is two, you see. The sign that pictures times is X, and when you see it, you'll know what's coming next. So let's continue with no hesitation, and we'll learn the simple tables of multiplication. The table of one has the simplest ranges. The number that you multiply never changes. One times three is always three, and one times two is two, you see. The sign that pictures times is X, and when you see it, you'll know what's coming next. So let's continue with no hesitation, and we'll learn the simple tables of multiplication.
Introduction to atomic energy. Here are some important highlights of atomic history. From the X-ray and electron and the quantum theory, down to Einstein and his formula for mass and energy.
Hip hooray, you got atomic energy. It could mean a better world for all. Hip hooray for those who made it come to be. May we present the main events and heroes great and small.
1896, France.
Henri Becquerel finds that uranium ore is radioactive.
1905, Switzerland.
Albert Einstein shows that energy and matter are equivalent. E equals mc squared.
1913, Denmark.
Niels Bohr explains how atoms emit light as electrons jump from higher orbits to lower ones.
1938, Germany.
Otto Hahn and Fritz Strassmann split the uranium atom.
1942, United States of America.
Enrico Fermi builds the first atomic pile and shows that atomic energy is practical.
Hope and pray we use the power constructively to bring about a peaceful world for people great and small. High above us, way up yonder, planets wander through the starry skies. While we gaze at them and ponder, they just wander on.
Stars appear to blink and twinkle, but the planets have a steady glow.
High above us, way up yonder, planets wander through the starry skies. While we gaze at them and ponder, they just wander on.
Which is the biggest?
Jupiter.
Which is the brightest?
Venus.
Which one has a ring?
Saturn.
Which one is most likely to support life?
Mars.
Which one is nearest the sun?
Mercury.
Which is the one we love the best?
Good old Mother Earth.
High above us, way up yonder, planets wander through the starry skies. While we gaze at them and ponder, they just wander on.
We are all solid members of the rock family. We're metamorphic, igneous, or sedimentary.
I'm granite.
I'm agate.
I'm sandstone.
I'm soapstone.
We're flint, gneiss, and gypsum, and quartzite.
I'm limestone.
I'm pumice.
And I am mica schist.
We're porphyry, obsidian, and marble.
Hey, don't forget us. I'm quartz.
I'm slate.
I'm shale.
I'm hornblende.
We're cinnabar,
hematite,
talc,
metamorphic,
igneous,
or sedimentary.
We are all solid members of the rock family.
Which of you are the metamorphic rocks?
We are.
I'm slate.
I'm nice.
I'm schist.
I'm quartzite.
We were formed when other rocks were squeezed and changed by heat and pressure in the earth.
Which of you are the igneous rocks?
We are.
I'm granite.
I'm basalt.
We're two of the igneous rocks.
We were formed when molten rock solidified.
And how about
the sedimentary rocks.
We are sedimentary rocks.
Limestone.
Sandstone.
Shale.
We were formed when rocks were broken down by weathering and deposited in layers in the rivers, lakes, and oceans.
We are all solid members of the rock family. We're metamorphic, igneous, or sedimentary.
I'm granite.
I'm agate.
I'm sandstone.
I'm soapstone with flint,
gneiss, and gypsum, and quartzite.
I'm limestone.
I'm pumice.
And I am mica schist
with porphyrite, obsidian, and marble. We are all different branches of the same family tree, but we're all solid members of the rock family.
Metamorphic,
igneous,
or sedimentary.
We are all solid members of the rock family.
Rocks and gems and minerals, rocks and gems and minerals. Anyone can have some fun with rocks and gems and minerals. What's a rock and what's a gem? How do you distinguish them? What's a gem and what's a rock? If you know the answer, knock. Now, rocks are made up of one or more minerals, and gems are certain kinds of rare and valuable rocks. There are different kinds of rock. Think of some before you knock. Do you know some kinds of rock? Scratch your head and give a knock.
Granite, sandstone,
marble,
slate,
shale,
limestone,
flint, obsidian,
feldspar.
Good, that's enough for now.
How are the rocks formed?
Well, some rocks, like obsidian, were formed from lava that came from erupting volcanoes. And other rocks, like shale and sandstone, were deposited in layers by rivers and on the seashore. Other rocks, like slate, were formed in the earth by great heat and pressure.
Rocks and gems and minerals, rocks and gems and minerals. Anyone can have some fun with rocks and gems and minerals.
You're listening to WBAI FM, your rock station. And gem and mineral station. That was our little rock set from the nature songs and from experiment songs.
Yes.
Not only space music, but rock music too.
Space music and rock music. And music from folk people's childhoods. Music that, it had an impact on people. People remember it. Didn't have an impact on me. I got into this stuff much later.
He's
like,
really guilty about this. You know?
I am guilty about this. I'm torn. I'm torn about not really being. In a way,
now he's rediscovering other people's childhoods.
Exactly. In a way, I am kind of torn about not being into science when I was a kid.
It's just the whole subculture you were locked out of.
Exactly. It's very weird. I mean, science does bring back childhood memories, though, because we're all introduced to it. And why is it that, in a way this is a stupid question, but maybe it's not a stupid question, why did science click when it came to Henry Lowengard? I mean, why did it just sort of, in a way, you managed to sort of strike a balance between this stuff and creativity, whereas for me, this stuff was pure poison. Not that it became poison when I, later in life, I saw the beauty of it, but why did this stuff sort of click with you?
Gee, I always thought it was a great way to meet girls, but it turned out not to be. Actually, now it is, right?
Now it is, yeah.
But it's a good way to avoid girls, that was sure, back then. And there are other things that, you know, science, when you have little things that work, a little experiment, a little bit of questioning, there's a real good give and take between you and your experiment. And if you build circuits, like I was into electronics a lot earlier than maybe some people were, and it's like, why is this thing not working? All the things are connected. Oh, and then you run around, you touch it, and you wait and find out what component is hot. You know, it's a real hands-on experience. The same thing happened when I discovered or got into computing around 1968, which is about the same time all this, you know, several years after these records. They didn't have computer songs on these records, although I've written a few, but I'm not going to sing them right now because I don't have my beautiful accompaniment with me. I never sing unaccompanied. Actually, I do all the time, so I'm lying to you, but I will be honest and admit all my failures. And so, prepared, the atmosphere was right, chance for advancement, and they always had fascinating things coming in these science classes as companies with, like, Bell Labs, and somebody called up actually requesting stuff from Hemo the Magnificent, and I don't think that's from the Bell Science series, which directed and they had animation segments with Dr. Frank Baxter saying, like, call up Roll 3, please, and some dumb guy asking him questions all the time, and some of them had marionettes, some of them had animation, and some of them were directed by Frank Capra, oddly enough.
Really?
Yes, indeed. And these things were very tight, exceedingly entertaining, and I remember very well the one on speech and phonology, influenced me very well as a guy was, like, drawing on a strip of paper and fed it through this machine and out came words, while I wrote a program that does more or less the same thing a couple of years ago, except it's, of course, computerized and swell. So, I remember back to that just as well as anything else. I was very impressed by little things like that. A simple demonstration sticks in your head. I was out at the Hall of Science a couple of weeks ago to go and see their new audio exhibits, and of course encourage you all to go to support your local museums, like the Hall of Science in Flushing, Queens, or the beautiful New York Pavilion, New York Pavilion. I don't remember which pavilion it was. I only went there once in 1965. You can't expect me to remember everything, right? But out at the World's Fair grounds, they have the New York Hall of Science, where they have a great number of hands-on experiments for you to use, and some of them are a little busted, so don't push them too hard. Or you can go out to the newer Liberty Science Center in Jersey City, Brand J, Brand L, where they have a big IMAX theater and a lot of other interactive, in the good old sense of interactive, like it's a big block of wood with a hinge on it kind of thing, that shows you how it hurts when you slam your finger in it or something. Actually, they don't have any of those sadistic kind of experiments. I think that maybe I'm confusing it with some other kind of museum. But, yes, support those kind of hands-on museums and kids' stuff. And, what else is there to say?
Well, I mean, we'll move on and play some more music. It's funny. It's fun having you here. Just a couple of quick questions. I can't help but, you've never really spoken about interactivity in the various times you've appeared on this show. I mean, what do you think of, what a dumb-sounding question that sounds.
What do you think of interactivity? Well, you can either be inert and not interact with anything,
or you
can be interactive. Do I think about, do I have a position on this?
Well, not so much do you have a position on it, but do you think that it's becoming non-interactive? I guess the ultimate question is that it seems to me that, to what extent will interactivity be interactivity in that, it seems like it'll become interactive up to a point, but, I mean, it really won't be interactive, if you know what I'm saying. In other words, it's like a...
It's a little hard to tell what you're saying.
Okay, yeah, it is difficult.
You want me to answer the question before you ask it?
Yeah.
basically, you can sit and be, like, let's not say interactive, because it's sort of a loaded word, and maybe it's distracting us a little. It seems to be distracting you, at least. So let's think about, like, here comes BAI. It's coming on me. Production and consumption, right? Sort of an economics of interactions. So there's, the ability to produce your own culture, more or less, or cultural seams. I'm not going to do the semiotics show, but basically you're spitting out these symbols all the time, whether you know it or not, and people can receive them. And if you're mostly on the receiving end, you get one kind of experience. If you're mostly on the producing end, you're on one kind of experience. And if you're happily interchanging signs and codes with each other, then you have a third kind of experience. And maybe it's that third one that interactive is maybe talking the most about. So it's the difference between playing a concert, in which case you're sometimes interacting with things that the audience doesn't even know, like the composition that you have in your head or the painting that you're trying to do, or sitting in the audience where your job is to sit there, listen to the music, and clap, or talking on the telephone where two people are on the phone and one of them says, talk to me, and the other one says, no, I don't want to talk to you. And then the third one says, hey, I'm on the line by mistake. So eventually we're trying to get to the telephone stage with other kinds of symbolic interchanges. that normally wouldn't be done in that particular kind of way. I mean, that's my foolish take on it at 2:56:48 in the morning.
Yeah. It is a loaded question. In some ways, it's just such a buzzword this year. It's just this year's buzzword in interactivity. But
push the button, something happens, and you can see how this kind of stuff has poisoned a few, you know, things like I went to see some exhibit at the Museum of Natural History, one of the other places that I just simply refer to as the museum because that's the one that I go to the most, and they had an exhibit up, and they had, you know, giant placards on the screen. You know, they're basically presenting information visually, and you have to read them. But they have buttons underneath that lit up certain sections of these little boards. And the main purpose of the button was to push the button. It had nothing to do with the information that it was displaying or the fact that it was lit or unlit. The whole thing could have been lit cleanly the entire time. But, the fact that you had to go up and touch it was the way to get you to interact. But, of course, it's not an interaction that has any meaning or even subsidiary meaning for the things that you're trying to learn. So I don't think that's the finest design in the world.
No, I mean, we'll play records, I guess, just briefly. It's not a question even, but I mean, it seems to me that what keeps clicking in my head, and it's kind of like there's something that I'm very uncomfortable with. I don't, it's somewhere over there, but it's in a way it reduces itself to the difference between the word tinker and the word art. There's a lot of, it seems like.
Well, I like this stuff between snapshots and, you know, like, arty photographs, right? You know, anyone can aim a camera somewhere and push the button, and these days, especially, I call them blind man's cameras. They're self-focusing.
Yeah.
They fix all their lighting problems and all that other stuff. But somehow, when a person knows what they're doing, it makes a better picture, and maybe it's because that knowledge is flowing through the whole process of taking it that makes the difference, and that's what people can appreciate, no matter what the actual medium is doing and how sophisticated it may happen to be.
To me, I think we're discovering the beauty of science, but there's a part of me that just feels that we're selling our souls to tinkerers, you know, and we're sort of like, you know, we were blinded by these incredible tinkerers, by these amazing sorcerers, apprentices, who are very clever, very creative. But nevertheless, it has more to do with tinkering than it does with art. And art is a different kettle of fish than tinkering, but we've discovered just how much fun it is to tinker and how much, what wonderful things, what wonderful products tinkerers can create for us. So
that's right. I'm a tinkerer. I tinker with software, though. So instead of doing a crossword puzzle, which is some kind of tinkering,
yeah,
when at the end you're left with a paper with a lot of letters on it. when I'm done, I'm left with this piece of software, which in theory I could sell, but of course I always give away, right? And, it's like there's tinkering. I didn't mean to turn it into a product. It's just the way I do this activity just turns into products at the end, or doing any other kind of thing, as sewing and macrame and all that stuff.
We're going to go right back to music, because that's the thing. The tinkering is so much fun. And there's a part of me that's afraid of fun. Remember the Devo song, Time Out for Fun? That was one of their better songs. Oh No, It's Devo, from the album Oh No, It's Devo, when they just... Anyway, let's forget about Devo. Where are we going next?
He really wanted to play Devo tonight, and I came in with these singing science records and just ruined his entire segue.
You did. I mean, I'll get back to it. Devo was, I think, this shows that I am a bit of a nerd. I think that one of the first things I ever played on the radio was Devo. Was Devo.
I always just consider them punks. I didn't think they were nerds.
Oh, I guess, you know. Anyway, where are we going next? I've lost. Are we going there or VAR?
Well, I'll have to take a look.
We're going VAR, huh?
We're going VAR.
We're going VAR, so I'm
going
to...
We're going south. To discover how silk is made.
We're going to discover how silk is made. Anyway, see you guys in a bit.
This is the way that silk is made. Silk is made. Silk is made. This is the way that silk is made, by the hint of silkworm. A lady moth will lay her eggs, the farmer takes away her eggs. The farmer takes away her eggs and puts them into storage.
The farmer takes away her eggs and puts them into storage.
In the spring the eggs are hatched in an incubator.
Now the eggs are tiny worms, the worms are hard to eat.
time when all they do is eat and grow the whole day through. Munch and crunch, and while they chew, they keep a growing bigger. One day when they are kind of big and through with eating like a pig, they look around to find a twig to fasten their cocoons to. The farmer knows just what it means. He rushes wrecks upon the sea. No worm will lack a bit of wreck to fasten its cocoon to.
Now they begin to spin cocoons, and here is how they do it. From the upper lip there comes a gluey, gooey fluid. As the fluid hits the air, to silk and thread it hardens. They spin and wind the silk, they spin round and round their bodies.
This is the way cocoons are spun, and after the cocoons are done, the processing is then begun to make them into raw silk. The cocoons are sorted for color and soaked in water to soften the gum that holds them together. Then the cocoons are unwound, and strands of several of them are joined together to form a thread. These threads are processed and combined to make stronger threads that may be woven into a variety of silk products such as satin, crepe, velvet, and brocade. This is the way that silk is made, silk or satin or brocade. This is the way that silk is made by the little silkworm.
The sun rise in the morning. Where does the sun rise
in the east?
Where does the sun set in the evening? Where does the sun set
in the west? East is east and west is west. North is north and south is south.
Where does the sun rise?
In the east.
Where does the sun set?
In the west.
Where do the birds fly for the summer? Where do the birds fly?
To the north.
Where do the birds fly for the winter? Where do the birds fly?
To the south. East is east and west is west. North is north and south is south.
Where do the birds fly?
To the north.
Where do the birds fly?
To the south. East is east and west is west. North is north and south is south.
Pointing, they say, is not polite.
But when we play, it's quite all right.
What causes a desert climate? Hot, dry air. What causes the hot, dry air? Here is one way. Air goes up a mountain range, cools as it rises. The moisture condenses and precipitates. As the air goes down the other side of the mountain, it is drier because most of the water has left it. The air heats up as it descends, and water droplets tend to evaporate. The combination of hot, dry air creates a desert. This is the way deserts are made in the western part of the United States.
Latitude, prevailing winds, and ocean currents, mountains, and the nearness to the sea. Things like that determine what we call the climate, determine what the climate of a place will be. What is the climate? It's the average weather in a particular area. What is the climate? It's the average weather over a period of time. averages of temperatures and rain occurrence calculated scientifically. Things like that determine what we call the climate, determine what the climate of a place will be. What is the climate? It's